Okay, so how's it going with building these stories? Is it a comfortable, happy thing, or are there questions about these first three steps? We'll do a little review first, and then we'll jump into the Nord Node deal. Anybody? Okay. So these three steps, getting comfortable with these basic keywords and then starting to build a story. And what those first three steps tell you, since there are no questions, is that this is how the past becomes created to be the present. And whatever somebody comes in to, God bless everybody, but whatever somebody comes into an astrology session to complain about, it's going to be related to something within these first three steps. And, the assumption of what the world is like with the South Node or unhappiness about that or some tension about the role he or she performs or fulfills, or the kind of thing about passion and power that can and fear and trepidation and anxiety that can come with the Pluto thing. I haven't yet met anybody who asks me a question where the nodal structure, one of these three steps, at least one, isn't called in. So as you get this foundation down, just understand that you're learning basically about all the things that can emotionally vex a person, dog that person, and to what emotional stuff that person is attached, whether that person feels it's good or not. It's like the whole emotional landscape under the surface of day-to-day emotions, like the whole landscape under there. That's what we're looking at with these three steps. So how the past has been carried forward to be the present. And that's kind of what all these three steps are. Now today we have the North Node. And this is the thing the person needs to grow into, but probably doesn't know how to. And when you talk about growing into the North Node, it's about tempering the assumptions and preferences and habit patterns of the South Node with alternate choices. Obviously we're talking about an opposition. North Node opposes South Node. From the standpoint of the karmic incubator of family, you have this thing that is 180 degrees away from the family system. So whenever I'm telling you about your North Node, and you're telling somebody else, automatically assume that this person grew up in the South Node and the North Node is weird. Just assume that right off the bat. Different responses to that weird are anxiety, fear, or denial is a huge one about the North Node. People just would rather it didn't exist, and you can sit there and tell them, this is what it's about. And they can look at you like, I've just decided to edit out what you're saying right now, because I don't want that to have to be true. I don't want that to be real. And I have that experience quite a bit when talking to people. At this stage in my career, they seem to trust me. And so when I tell them this is a blind spot and it's good to grow into it, they tend to trust me. But early on, when I was working with a lot more in-person clients, when I lived in California, they like phone clients as I do now, I got a lot of blank looks. And people, just like indicating that they didn't know what to do with the information. And that actually helped me, figure out new ways to teach them and explain it as well. So it's opposite family. It's opposite ways of being. And when you think about your own South Node, you think about your own emotional triggers and what makes, your personality feel safe, like makes your human self and your linear mind feel safe and secure, a lot of that would be South Node stuff. Like, this is what I think the world is about, and this is where I'm safe. And so this other thing is 180 degrees away, the exact opposite. So for everybody, it's uncomfortable. And until they figure it out, and you can meet people who are pretty well-balanced and grounded and sane, and they may know a lot about this way of being, whether they have, the tool of astrology or not, but it's still uncomfortable to do it because it goes against everything that they've been taught or shown, right, had modeled for them, is supposed to be. And we're talking about many, many lives. So it's kind of like, I am always in Cancer in the 10th house. That's where I live. And so every time you say Capricorn 4th house to me, I'm like, well, yeah, I kind of heard of those people. but I'm happy where I am, thanks. And so you know, to get drawn into that, you know, to get drawn into that is really important. So taking those first three steps, the past becomes the present. Person comes in and is having a complaint. Something's out of balance, something's wrong. So a lot of my work focuses on those first three steps. But when I'm telling the karmic story, and if somebody asks me about growth and evolution, I always talk about the North Node. But there are readings where I don't really talk about the North Node because we're cleaning up the past. So I think it's really important for anyone, you know, desiring to learn this stuff with me, that to get this habitually down, you know, to get this fourth step in there. But you won't be talking about it constantly unless you are focusing on karmic readings and you want to, as a point, you know, as a principle, include it. Not to say I leave it out, but if somebody's really hurting about Pluto stuff, sometimes we don't get the North Node, you know. Sometimes I mention it briefly as well for their reference, but I don't. It's not, in my mind, it's not irresponsible not to cover every possible thing, because I just, my style, my personal way of doing it is to respond, you know, to what the people to what the people need, give the people what they need. So I sent this thing out, I think, 2 days ago, the handout, and so, you know, assuming that you've had a chance to look at it, are there any questions or comments about it before we kind of put it all together with charts?
Well, this is Maria.
Yeah.
I seem to find in some of these combinations there's more tension than in other combinations, or is that just
okay,
my ability to perceive the tension in each one?
Oh, you mean in these axis pairs, like north, south node, north node?
Yeah.
Well, there's always tension. I mean, I'm sure you're good at finding tension too. But there's always tension because it's like I prefer the first house, south node first house, but I need to learn the seventh. There's that natural opposition. So you will find that tension always.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of these combinations seem more tense to me, like the first one, the south node and the first house, independence need to go it alone, and then the north node is meeting the other and working with the other. That's pretty tense.
Yeah, it could be my wording too. Seems to reveal it could be my wording as well. You know,
okay.
But well, it, yeah. Go
on
ahead.
On the south node in the sixth house, life is about humility, humiliation, and surrender.
Yeah,
which really
right.
kind of goes with humility yeah. or humiliation, and then going with oh, that doesn't seem as tense to me. Am I wrong there?
It's not that you're wrong. It's that when you. When we put life experiences and examples to that,
uh-huh.
you would see the tension. So for example, if my south node is in the sixth house, my orientation to life is hands-on. It could be very analytical, but it's probably hands-on as well. I'm doing things. I'm there's a chore. You know, the cows need milking. Somebody's got to do it. Either me or you, but somebody's got to do it. And control-oriented because you are needing to manage the details of daily routine.
Okay.
So if I choose humility, that is a form of surrender, but any example that would go with 12th house versus 6th house would reveal the difference. And the difference in the 12th house is, you know, the philosophy of things happen when they need to.
I see, yeah.
So, oh, I don't know who's going to go milk the cows. I figure one of us will do it when the time is right. and how that can be enervating, crazy-making, you know, confusing to somebody with the sixth house south node that says, it doesn't get done if you don't do it.
Right.
So you have that element of hands-on active versus trust. I think my wording here has kind of did that for your mind. And, you know, I just picked certain phrases that are not, you know, they're accurate, but they don't tell the whole story, of course, because
yeah.
it's just a phrase.
Well, that
yeah.
helps. Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome, yeah. And the same way in all of these combinations, the same exact thing. Yeah, because you're accustomed to one thing, and energetically, consciousness-wise, you know, through other people and through experiences and events, you're asked to stop doing what you're happy doing or comfortable doing. You know, stop what's familiar and do this other thing which you never wanted to do. You know, and like in my case, my Capricorn North Node, how many people I have had with their Venus or Moon or Venus and Moon or Sun and Venus on my North Node. It's really startling how many people that I encounter as teachers for me, they just hold it, you know, just they're just holding space. They just are, and it triggers that for me. It opposes my South Node. So it's like when you have somebody with who activates that or an event or a transit, you know, it's conjunct the North Node, but that's not real for you. The real juice is in the opposition to the South Node. That's what activates you. Opposing your habit patterns is the key point there. Opposes your habit patterns. And if you're willing to see beyond, oh, I don't like that, or, well, that's not what I would choose, if you're willing to see beyond that, then you can see what the invitation is. Like one of my good friends now has his Sun and Venus and Mercury on my North Node in Capricorn. And Tucson's a very Capricorn place for me for a bunch of reasons, including my social scene. My friends are all like Capricorn or Capricorn rising or something. You know, my Cancerian approach doesn't fly with him. Like, he opposes my Cancerian way of being. And that is very unhappy making. I mean, part of me hates it. Part of me feels I can't get comfortable there. But I have this vocabulary, and so I know that's my North Node. You know, he just very directly, his midheaven too, right there, activates my Capricorn. So it helps me temper things, but I have to be willing to change as well. And that's the secret of the North Node. When you find it activated, are you willing to change, or are you going to, you know, decide that this thing that's opposite you or outside your preference, you know, preference parameters or something, if you're going to automatically ignore it or if you're going to learn to work with it.
Tom, can I just can I just clarify something about the South Node and South Node ruler? It's Mary. So.
Yeah, of course.
So the South Node is like the habit patterns and the family sort of, you know, environment and everything. But if the South Node ruler is who you really are, and if it's nothing perhaps like the South Node,
mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to work out.
Yes.
Do you know where I'm going with that? So in some ways, I know there's no North Node. You know, there's nothing opposite. You know what I'm trying to say? There's.
I do.
I would have thought the opposition would have been to the South Node ruler, really. The behavior that might have been very unfamiliar.
That's true as well. That is also true.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's also true. What happens is, even if, so let's just pick two signs to talk about South Node and South Node ruler. Let's say South Node is in Aries, and the South Node ruler is in Virgo, right? That natural quincunx,
right,
150
yeah.
degrees. Yeah. So that, you know, the South Node in Aries, you're born into an Aries incubator.
Yeah.
Right. This is the vibe in the family is an Aries thing. Not exclusively, but that is a chunk of what the ways of being that you're exposed to. You will see the world that through that lens, even if you're uncomfortable or don't get it or hate it.
Right.
You will see the world through that lens. And so you're in Virgo. You're you know, trying to do something you know, with intention and thoroughness. Right, you're trying, and there's a lot of things happening quickly around you without thinking, Aries stuff.
Yeah, right.
So you'll identify as the Virgo person, you know, that vibe, but you'll still see the world as full of Aries.
Right.
Like, with the South Node ruler, we don't see the world that way. We see ourselves that way.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's all about context, and is it me or is it my surroundings? And the South Node will be the surroundings. When you have an opposition to the South Node ruler, yes, that is also foreign, and I don't want to be like those people.
No.
I would never want to become like those people. That's also true.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. But you wouldn't see the world like that. You'd see some people like that.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Good question. Great question. Yeah. Other questions? Okay.
I was just going to ask you one quick question. I'm just still, I mean, it's a jump back to Pluto, so we don't really, you don't need to really answer now, and I might put in an email, but I still can't work out whether people are very aware of their Pluto issue, or is that something that really is subterranean? Like, I mean, don't worry about answering it now, but I still can't sort of get my head around whether that's something that people are aware of, that's the issue, or not necessarily.
I do want to take a couple of minutes to answer that. It's important. You know, because I keep saying, and other people say too, that it represents the unconscious. And so, you know, unconscious drives and desires and issues and fears and whatever, passions. And there are different kind of things that can happen. They might not own this energy.
No.
Because they don't know that it's theirs. So that's when you get into projection.
Yeah.
And, oh, that person and her attitude problem and her jealousy and her possessiveness and her power hungry, you know, that's like where we can, well, that's like one category of it. And obviously in that case, you know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, I think, don't know.
Right.
And that's why this kind of way of doing things, this, you know, that we're talking about in this class and this, you know, stuff related to it, is so phenomenally powerful because it puts words to something that we don't often see. I think people don't know. People see other people as jealous or power hungry. And when that comes up in us, you know, or so hurt that we're angry and vengeful or something, I mean, these awful, awful, ugly things. When it comes up in us, I think it's hard to own it. Some of us, of course, can learn to do that, and some of us are comfortable owning that stuff. But yeah, I think most people don't know it. And so it's good to assume that, you know, it's good to approach it gently. And to, you, when you are talking to somebody about their Pluto, well, let's say it this way. These days, as of the last couple of years, maybe 18, 20 months, 2 years, I've been telling people, look, there's a part of you that would do anything to survive and has some really nasty things to say and is angry because it's hurt. This is terrible. This is awful. And you wouldn't want to own it if you could talk to it. And sometimes people say, oh, yeah, I've met that part. And I say, become friends with that part and accept it. And that's kind of an open door into something that I think is really liberating, but it's also challenging. You know, it's also scary. To, you know, I always use the example, and I just wrote about it in the book, so I don't have a problem sharing it. but I use the example of being surrounded by barking dogs, and this part of me had, like, for 2 years where I lived one place, and then I moved to another place, and I thought it would be quieter, and it was louder, and this part of me came forward and said, you know what, I have a plan. We'll just kill every one of them one by one. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I don't think I want to do. And this part was just certain. You know, and that's Pluto in Libra. What would I do to create peace?
Yeah.
Like at all costs, Pluto, to create peace so that I could develop work that I think is very useful. So anyway, you know, the ugly thing. And I don't know that about myself. Like 10, 20 years ago, I don't know that. But that's a part of the psyche with Pluto in Libra. It's just a part of it, whether we own it or identify with it or not. So I think we don't know about it till we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes life conspires to pile on stressful situations, often related to Pluto transits or transits to Pluto. But, you know, piling up stressful situations that stir this part of you into action,
mm-hmm.
which is one reason why they're so tiring. These transits. They're exhausting because some part of you that doesn't have access to speak and to be heard is trying to fight its way to the surface, but we've constructed our entire lives around denying that something like that could be within us. It's like seismic stuff under the surface shaking our foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the short answer is I don't think many people know, but
no,
then we find out.
Yeah,
like I lose my job, I lose my house, my family, they leave me. What is there left? My reaction to that. And Pluto can wake up. And what would I do to survive? Because everything's just gone to hell, as far as I'm concerned. You know, my stability, my... Right. And then we learn about it. Then we find out. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, good. Is that cool? Is that cool? Is that good?
Yeah. I just have to think about the projection stuff, about what you're not owning. Like, for you, what you're not... Like, if you weren't owning that Pluto and Libra, and you're projecting it out... Like, I just have to think about that for a little bit, what that would look like if you weren't owning that.
No, it looks like seeing obnoxious, aggressive behavior in other people.
Oh, like Aries almost, you know.
Yeah, sure. Like Libra has built into it some Aries stuff. I mean, it's kind of a subject of another class, but there's stuff built into there. It's like definition. Who am I? You know, they have that in common. Aries says, I am, and Libra says, it takes this long, circuitous way of saying, well, I am who I am, I know that who I am, because I see who you are and how you respond to me and how you treat me and how you respond to what movies I like and what I like to eat and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like overly wordy, reflective thing. So, but the core of it is self-definition, who am I? So if I put it in Libra, I'm not owning it.
Yeah.
Well, that other person, that's who that is. That person is a blah, 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 you know.
Right.
What a horrible person.
Right.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Cool. So we have this house basic stuff in this thing to give you the contrast, and the sign basics. And so we're gonna draw on this today, because we're going to look at these three example charts, less on the first chart. Well, we're going to do it on the first chart, but we're going to expand it, make sure we give equal time so you can play with three different stories. And then starting next week, for the following 3 weeks, we'll be doing more example workout stuff. exercise, I guess, is the way, it's the way people talk about that. So this week, I'll be giving you, probably tomorrow, I'll be giving you more example charts that we will begin discussing. So you can have some time to look at them and play with them if you want, and then we'll like work on making a well-oiled story and this basic terminology, and then expanding for different ones, just so you know where we're going with this after we build in this North End stuff today. Okay, so if there are no more questions about this, I want to just mention this thing. I want to say a little more than about the planet that might be conjunct the North Node. That, you know, I put these two notes, two major responses in the bottom. When there is a planet or a point, including like an angle, right, ascendant, et cetera, conjunct the North Node, it's as far away from their karmic history as possible. So if you think about something that you've never got to experience, you might really want it, or you might think you can't have it, and that's kind of the basis here. When it's on the North Node, we have seen other people have it, but we haven't had it. And sometimes we have gone after it, and sometimes it's been a struggle. Sometimes we've gotten there, but the cost is high. I have to leave my family behind to do it. I have to leave my community behind and everything I know. So sometimes the cost is too much, or pyrrhic, right? You know, it's like the victory decimated everything. And other times they go for it, but they don't really know what it is. And they'll have some ideas about what it looks like or what it should be like, but then they might be disappointed if it doesn't fit their pre-existing image. This is something really important to go into, so I want to give you an example. Just like when I talk about the North Node being their assumptions, I don't want to be like those people. When the planet is there, well, it's a part of the psyche. You know, it's a part of the person that's not activated or is not supported. You know, it seems not welcome. So with Jupiter on the North Node, for example, just picking, you know, belief as one keyword, you know, how to pray, what to believe. The family system might not get how to do Jupiter. It could also be joyfulness, buoyancy, optimism, hope, and that kind of thing. The family system doesn't get it. So this person, you know, a person with Jupiter conjunct the North Node might know that that kind of joyousness exists, and might be attuned to seeing it in other people, but might not know how to get there because it hasn't been a functioning part of that person's training, a welcome part. And so, but the pre-existing ideas, like if you see somebody like Santa Claus, he's joyful, he's happy, you know, whatever. Like I always, Santa Claus is a joke Jupiter figure for me, but we're going to use it now. It's like, how can I get to the place where I'm belly laughing all the time? How can I do that? And so people who seem like that or who do that may really stand out on the chart holder's radar. And the person might not be sure how to create that for him or herself or own it, but it's a real part of the psyche. And so transits and other people and situations and groups will activate that, and that person eventually has to learn to embrace this part of the self. Like, this is real within you. You know, I try to do that with my clients and tell them, you know, this thing has been left out. You know it's real. You know, you have to, or it's going to be very important for you to own it and make a place for yourself, make a place in that. And actually, I have a client who just a generic, excuse me, hold on one second. Just a, one example, a client with an Aquarius South Node and a Leo North Node, and her Venus is on the Leo North Node. And so warmth and creativity and, you know, laughter and joy and spontaneity has been left out for her. But she's been, I know that she has transitioned into this, but when I did her, the first reading for her maybe three and a half years ago, I said that to her, and she knew it was true. But how can I believe in that? Like, how can I trust that? Was kind of her attitude. No, I know that's real. Thank you for validating that. But what do I do? So there can be kind of a clueless thing. And now she is very warm and very smiley. And is a photographer. That's kind of, she's been building a business as a photographer. But prior to that, had worked in some kind of government office or something like this. That was rather like Aquarius 10th house was a South Node, and so Leo 4th house. You know, what would really make you happy? What lights you up on the inside? And that Venus is the key to it. So she had to learn how to own that Venus. And essentially, it comes down to giving yourself permission to do Venus and to lose your preconceived notions of it. Does all of that make sense so far?
Yeah?
We'll see in these charts. I think at least one of them has something on the North Node. So we'll go in and look. So if there are no questions on this stuff so far, I want to start looking at these example charts. And for some reason, hold on one second, the computer being slow. Okay. For some reason I'm being drawn to work with chart 3 first. Chart 3 in that list. And I see why now. I see why. I want to model for you the first 3 steps, then add on the 4th so you can see where we go with it. And since we've, you know, done some stuff with these charts, this won't all be, you know, not familiar. It won't be unfamiliar. So Pluto and Libra in the 3rd and retrograde. So Pluto in the 3rd, mind, education, asking questions, curiosity. It needs to be empowered through these things in a Libra way, finding balance, finding harmony, learning to work with others. It's kind of, you know, through that process, that's that. It's retrograde. So this person has to reinvent how this is done, and there are going to be some maybe tendencies or habits about Libra in the 3rd that don't work, but the person might be attached to thinking they are going to work, like adopting other people's ways of doing it. So, for example, how the person writes, the speaking voice, there might be certain affects or something like trying not to let something come out, you know, and kind of trying to be socially appropriate and not authentic. So that's one possibility here. Actually, I'd like to do the aspects too. I'd like to take you through the whole thing and then add in the North Node. So Pluto is opposing the Sun in Aries in the 9th, which is on the midheaven. We're very close to the midheaven. And so the person will find opposition and some miscommunication and challenge from solar people and situations. So people who take up space. In Aries, people who take up space who are bold. In the 9th house, They may be very optimistic, or they may believe something very strongly. They may literally be religious types, but they have a position. The ninth house is where we have a guiding principle. So these bold people who take up space are they have a position, and it's reflected back to this person. You know, what I think might not be cool, what I say might not be appropriate, because here's this big energy that's doing the opposite and kind of in my face about it. So that's that aspect. Yeah, I'm going to count the square to Saturn. That's 7 degrees. I had to make that thing bigger. Okay, that's better. So Pluto square Saturn in Gemini in the 11th. So authority figures who function in a Gemini way within groups, right? Communicators, people who change things within groups, authority figures are pressuring this person, squaring this person, saying you're not doing your communication right. And so, you know, there are going to be some issues with authority figures. The need to become the right authority figure through being pressured by people, you know, squared by and criticized by people who do that. I mean, either of these things, by the way, can really add to the idea of the Pluto retrograde. It's like if you're getting opposed by people who take up space, solar people, and you're getting squared by authority figures, you'd start to rethink what you're saying too. I mean, these are all the authority figure people, and the people who like probably have a lot of confidence. And so you're saying, this is what I think, and they're saying, really? Is that what you think? And it might be meant to be constructive, but you might get a little, you know, you're squared and opposed. You might start to, you know, have to rethink what you're saying, and that's part of the retrograde there. And then Pluto is quincunx, the 150 degrees, to Jupiter in Pisces in the 8th. That's the dotted line, that green line is the key. So there's the thing about being knocked off course by Jupiter people in Jupiter situations. Jupiter is another big energy. It's you know, the second biggest thing in the solar system. And so Jupiter people take up space as well. They tend to believe things. They tend to take risks. And in the 8th house, they might be intense or secretive. And in Pisces, they're either mystical or lost or addicted, something like this. And at this stage in the story, this is how vague I leave it. You know, I just kind of didn't even make sentences for you there. I didn't even make a, you know, cogent story. But that quincunx knocked off course. And you can think about the energy of Pisces in the 8th. Things can escape us. Secrets from under the surface can take over that we didn't even know were coming. That can knock our linear logical minds off course. And that's the idea of the quincunx to Pluto in the 3rd. Does that make sense? Okay, yeah, okay. So that's the Pluto setup. Lots of, you know, it's all about communication, but the reflections and feedback from others can be very, very challenging as well. Okay, second step of the story, south node of the moon. This is the family incubator. The soul chooses a kind of environment in which to be born and raised, and or raised, south node Gemini in the 11th. We'll start with the 11th house part. A focus on groups or associations and networks, perhaps politics, and perhaps goals. What it takes to work together with others. This is all happening in a Gemini way, so there could be a lot of variation. There could be a lot of change and flexibility, and it could be a very wide network of loose contacts that are not relied upon a lot. But basically the family system somehow functions to train the person that groups are important and change is necessary. You know, groups are important and change is happening. This is conjunct the Saturn. So there's an element of stability and structure happening there. The family itself carries Saturn in Gemini energy. It's not just square Pluto, but it's also, you know, that carries that energy, saturated. Also, Mars and Moon in Gemini on the south node. So Mars issues, assertion, aggression, defense, rescue, passion, desire, sexuality. Moon issues are connectedness, belonging, family expectations and what home is about. And these things also saturate the family system. So the person comes in with a bevy of life experience, of multi-life experiences, of Saturn, Moon, and Mars in Gemini. The person is an expert at these, for better or worse, all the positives and the negatives. So the way the world is viewed will reflect these intersections of these archetypes. Saturn in the 11th, and all the, in these two in Mars and Moon in Gemini in the 11th as well. So the group mind, what it expects, what it takes to belong to the group, what, and that's kind of the expectation thing would be Moon and Saturn to some degree. What it takes to belong would be Moon, and the Mars thing would be what one has to do, because Mars is about doing, in order to belong within the group. So that's kind of the baseline wiring that we're talking about. There are no squares to the nodes, so then I'm going to go for, actually there, is there, wait, 22, 13, yeah, Midheaven I see square the axis. It's, no, I'm not doing that right, wrong sign, forget it, that's not true. My gosh, okay. Hold a Mercury-Neptune moment. So looking to the South Node ruler, how this person shows up, and that's in Pisces in the 8th, Mercury ruling that is in Pisces in the 8th. So this person's coming from that social thing where communication is paramount, change is always happening. You know, Mars in Gemini is a lot of different things happening, you know, a lot of change. And this person shows up as an 8th house figure. So I want to look you in the eyes. I want to tell you what's most important to me. I want to tell everybody. I don't want to tell the whole group. You know, I'm not interested in this group mind thing. I want individual connection. I'm looking for, you know, trust and interdependence in the 8th house. I'm looking to work with somebody. This is in Pisces. So there's a real need to surrender and merge with something. You know, and in this case, in the 8th house, it could be a project that's shared with others, but it's probably relationships and intimacy, a need to absolutely surrender and, you know, absolutely flow and merge within intimacy, partnership. South Node ruler conjunct Jupiter, and I'd use up to 8 degrees, and this is, looks like 7 and change or something, or maybe under 7. So South Node ruler conjunct Jupiter means a person is a Jupiter figure. As an individual, shows up as a Jupiter figure. And that could be philosophical. It could be jovial. It could be taking risks. It could be just a giant personality. It could be very warm. But there's something big about this person that may actually only get opened up when he or she trusts you. I think I have this person listed as a female. So when... when she trusts you, that then you might see that bigness. You might see that that Jupiter warmth and capacity for faith and hope and optimism. South Node ruler Mercury is also square the Mars and Moon, so it's square family. This person has tension with family. You know, not just that the signs are naturally square. You know, Gemini, Pisces. And that the houses 11 and 8 are naturally square, because the South Node ruler is 11 degrees from the nodes. It's not, you know, it's not square the nodes mathematically, but these issues about Moon Mars pressure the person, you know, belonging, action, and in this in Gemini, constant change. Constant change can vex this person, you know, square this person, be very very difficult to deal with. And so fitting in with family might be strange, because the family might be very Mars and Gemini. And this person is, you know, that's about change. That's about things happening and new information, and I'm going to go to these 7 places today. And this person in the 8th house wants to sit down and connect energetically and emotionally before we go to 2 places, like a very different energy. So South Node ruler Mercury is also square that Neptune, which is retrograde, in Sagittarius in the 5th. And the square is pressure and friction. Neptune is situations and people are, sometimes it's hard to pin them down. Sometimes they're evasive and slippery. Sometimes they're mystical. Sometimes they're addicted and lost. Sometimes they're crazy. Otherworldly, other dimensional, you know. They're in the fifth house. So they have self-expression is very important to them. They have big self-expression. It's in Sagittarius. It's huge. They might have ego issues, and they might be delusional, which is a Neptune word, about how big ego should be. So they're pressuring her. You know, they might be calling her out and trying to get her to flow with her own creativity, but she would be wanting to have this eighth house foundation for herself, and fifth house people are pressuring her. So that is about sexuality. It's about creativity. It's about, I want to hear what you have to say about this. And the tension here is the eighth house person says, I'm not sure if I trust you. You know, like maybe not even out loud. I'm not sure if I trust you. So that's the kind of tension we have here. So that's the south node ruler. That's what this person is experiencing. Now the north node, what this person is left out. This person needs to learn to grow into is Sagittarius in the fifth. So right off the bat, you know it's opposing family, so it's weird, you know, for this person. But you, in this case, you also see a planet squaring the south node ruler with the same symbolism, Sagittarius, fifth house. So it's a double thing that's difficult. It's absent from the family system in a healthy way, because it's a north node, but also this person has been pressured by people who do this way of being. So we have a two layers of potential prejudice or, you know, avoidance schemes that this person may engage in. Two layers, you know, like exponential efforts, you know, scheming and plotting to try not to do it. when you have a south node in Gemini, you may be very, very changeable and never stick to one thing. So the north node in Sagittarius is about focus, and here we have the little glyph being an arrow. And oftentimes the symbol for the sign is depicted as an archer or a centaur with a bow and a drawing back about to release this arrow, about to launch this missile. And, you know, it's about focus and setting out a long distance to achieve a goal. And many times it's a search for truth is kind of how I generically talk about it. But holding a vision is very important here. And so the tension between the Gemini South Node is things are always changing versus pick one thing to believe in, and then I would add, you can always change it later, don't stress about it, but believe in something. You know, you have to recover the ability to believe in something and to focus with the Sagittarius North Node. And in this fifth house, we're talking about individuality and pulling away from the group mind. And does all of this make sense so far? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Or anything not make sense so far, do it that way? Okay. Because I want to give you ideas on how this person may react to me telling him or her about this north node. That's kind of the key here. To get all this done so you can see where the person's coming from, so that you can have some framework or context for the objections I'm going to tell you this person tells me. So I'm saying to this person, individuality, creativity, you know, playfulness, spontaneity in the fifth house, but believing in your own creativity. Now, this person has multiple lifetimes of finding out what one has to do in order to belong. Like, that's the default assumption about what life is like. Moon, Mars, Gemini, South Node. The Saturn there can also say life is hard or necessity dominates. That's a possibility. And because it's in the 11th house, it can be group mind stuff that filters down and this person picked up. So I say to this person, does that make sense? Kind of Saturn, hardship, necessity, limitation as part of the group mind. And does that make sense as a general idea, Saturn in the 11th? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay. I say to the person, what what makes you, what creativity makes you joyful? Now, this is a classic setup for somebody having their own creativity within the family compared to something that everybody knows about. So, it's a random example of like, somebody says, it's like a little girl in the 70s. She goes, I'm going to sing just like Leif Garrett. And the family says, but you're a girl. She gets up and she's like got her fake microphone and she's going to do a performance with the family. And they're like, that doesn't sound anything like Leif Garrett. Now, it doesn't matter for her, right? She's just kind of taking a cue from this singer. It's like a random example. I don't know. I might be reading one of your minds. I don't know. But, like, it's weird. But, like, she might be just taking this as a cue to, like, oh, yeah, I also have a creative voice. That seems fun. I want to do it. You know, but, like, comparing to something that is very well known, which is a part of the group mind, this famous person in the 70s. Does that make sense? Kind of the comparison thing. And the family being Marsy about it, which can be very aggressive or assertive, too. So this kid can learn, I didn't do it right. Or my creative voice isn't welcome. Well, not that a kid would phrase it that way. But that kid might naturally be spontaneous in all parts of the chart. Like kids are, you know, oftentimes kids are shaped emotionally by what's happening in their lives. But sometimes, you know, especially when it comes to the fifth house, they might just do something. But the reflection from family with the south and the 11th with moon on it might be, you know, might be there. Might be, might seem like a block or a, you know, something that makes something that makes it prohibitive to do it. That's just one example, but that's kind of what I'm getting. It's kind of the image I'm getting from the Sagittarius fifth house north node. Just trust that your opinion, even just the basic currency of the fifth house in Leo, the opinion, your individual input, your idea, your opinion matters. And what happens in the person's head can be, I wish that were true, but the words of my mother echo and ring and dog me. And yes, I know I'm 50, it doesn't matter, I can't get her out of my head. Like that would be a very Mars, Moon, Gemini, South node kind of thing. You know, like the criticisms of somebody important in the family can like linger. And the other thing is the predisposition of a Gemini South node is to be open to different stimuli and different ideas and to not pick something to stick with. But that Sagittarius, when we talk about Sagittarius as a handicap, you know, it's a hyper-focus to the detriment of new information, you know, to the detriment of experiencing new things or learning new things. But the south, with the north node in Sagittarius, you want the person to focus. You don't want them to be myopic, but you want them to pick something like a vision, you know, like a torch in the distance. And that's my goal. That's where I'm headed. That's what I'm developing. So this person would object, could object to being drawn into that fifth house by the tapes in his or her head because of that south node. And any questions or comments on that before I add another layer? Mm-hmm. So the other layer is very important elements of personality are conjunct the south node. You know, moon, what does it take for this person to be happy? Person has to, you know, do Gemini the 11th conjunct Mars. So, you know, the elements of personality, even just the Saturn, Moon, and Mars, you want the person to do the thing, but you have to have them unlearn what was bad about it from when they grew up or what wasn't helpful. You can never get this person to not be a Gemini 11th house figure. And you shouldn't try. Right? Moon is there. You know, happiness is there. But unwinding all these patterns and these ideas is going to be absolutely critical. So in this kind of case where there's three bodies conjunct the south node, so the person needs to live there to some degree. And the north node sharing symbolism with a body square the south node ruler, this Neptune square the Mercury, you know, there are these layers of I can't go over there. A, people who do that are jerks, and B, I have to stay over here because that's where my family is, and that's where I'm happy. So you know, it's really good to teach people that they shouldn't leave behind the south node, but to incorporate it into, you know, temper their south node with the north node. And so I want to incorporate different ways of being and non-reactivity when it comes to the north node way of being. So when somebody says to this person, I'd love to hear you sing that song sometime. You know, if you listen to a song and a person says, oh, it's my favorite song, her friend says, oh, I'd love to hear you sing it. How would you sing it? I know that you like to sing. I know you've never, you know, you've never done that for me, but I know you like it. And so for that person, instead of feeling like a deer in the headlights or pressured, right, squared south node ruler in the eighth, which is not about revealing yourself all the time, living in the eighth house, you know, instead of turning it down or shutting down because of that, to say, oh, well, this person is simply offering me this idea. Oh, I would like to hear you sing that. You know, because the karmic thing is to not do it. That's the karmic thing. That's the repeating the karma is to shut down and say, oh, I would never do that. So that's actually, that story is a little more extensive than I intended, but I figured, whatever, I'm a week early on doing that extensive because I want to do that with us next week, you know, do that with us, with you. So you see, is anything mysterious? I've tried to build the course in a way, build these steps in a way that it's not mysterious, but just check in or let me know now if anything in that four-step process is mysterious or you need some dots connected or anything like that. I guess I'm doing my job. Okay. Okay. Cool. So, great. Are you guys, are you ready to join in with me? I'll do a little chorus here, a little join in with me to do some of this story on another chart here. I might, so let's get a roll call of who's here, because I know not everybody's here. I know Mary has been here, but she might actually be leaving soon.
Yeah, I'm just checking now, actually. Oh, you got the email. Okay, okay. Tommy, thank you. I am actually...
Okay, you're right on. Thank you, work. Mary.
Thank you. Bye. I'll take the next week.
Bye-bye. So we have Mariah and we have Jillian. I know that. And who else is here?
Starshine,
great.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And Sandy's here.
And Sandy, great. Thank you. Okay. So why don't we go to... So we did chart two actually a lot last week. Why don't we go back to chart one, the Pluto and Cancer in the first? We've done this story, so I want to kind of breeze through it. So I'm gonna pick on you guys to just give me a couple of keywords here and there, and then I want to discuss like this last thing I told you about possibilities. Oh, and if the North Node in the fifth, and I said I want to hear you sing that song, and the person you know, I might not do it. I might shut down because of that, because of these different reasons. In this case, I want to first get some keywords and kind of do that, and then talk about possibilities. And this is the chart on which I think anybody who's emailed me with specific questions about these charts, it's been this chart because we spent so much time talking about it. So at least some of you have spent some time looking at this chart a little more and reviewing the class that we did on it, including it, I think, last week. Or maybe the week before. So a couple keywords for this Pluto in the first. Jillian, do you want to just give us a couple keywords for Pluto in the first?
Pluto in Cancer in the first.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. So I guess in the high road, the low road, the person's here to learn about, to be empowered about learning how to take care of themselves,
mm-hmm.
take care of their bodies. And so,
that's good. That's
so,
great.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and you know, on the low side, so they might not know how to do that. Maybe that's, you know, maybe they are. I don't know. I almost want to say with Pluto and Cancer in the first, if they're not doing their Pluto right, or in the past they might have experienced like deep emotional pain.
Yeah, exactly.
To their identity, and so
yeah.
So
perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Thank you. And then somebody else tell me what, like, the Pluto conjunct Jupiter-Mars. Just give me, like, you know, a couple ideas about what that can be. I know we've talked about it, and you can repeat what I said, but, you know, what we said in the last class, but just, you know, Pluto conjunct Jupiter-Mars in the first. And I don't know, Sandy, do you want to do that? Just, like even a keyword each is great, if you're comfortable doing that. It's okay if you're not, you can tell me.
I don't have any more vocabulary right now, but let's see. Pluto.
Yeah, so this empowerment journey is wrapped up with Jupiter Mars, is the idea.
Okay, so Mars, kind of assertion, aggression. Jupiter would make it bigger.
Yeah, perfect.
Sure.
Right. Right, yeah, exactly. Thank you. So everything about the Pluto in Cancer in the first is bigger and has this Marsy edge to it as well, aggression, assertion. So everything that we could say about it is also, it's kind of supercharged with this stuff. So thank you. Thank you.
No, I just wanted to say, so in a sense, like, this person could really know how to take care of themselves in a big way, and or they could, like, I mean, they have the capacity to really cut themselves down.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's like, either we're really biggest, worst inner critic, yeah.
That's right, exactly. Mm-hmm. I feel too much, and because there's a thing here where I might show up as this super intense emotional person. Well, what happens when that happens? 98% of the people around you don't want to deal with you because you're too much. So it's like I'm always hyper-emotional. Nobody wants to deal with that. So it's like then you get this, like, Mars aggression thing in there and can be cutting and, you know, and kind of, not literally, but I mean edgy and aggressive.
Passive-aggressive,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Or outright obnoxiously aggressive, like either way or back and forth or, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So good. So we're going to leave out the Pluto square the nodes just because it's more relevant for the second step. More relevant in the second step. Starshine, just give me a couple ideas, a couple keywords for South Node in the fifth, and then in Libra. Let's start with the fifth.
So what I had for that was that the habitual motivation is that creativity and shining matters by yielding or bending to others.
Okay, perfect. Great. Yeah, that's good. Oh, that's right. You had written me kind of a long email with that, and so you'd really thought about this chart.
Yeah.
I remember that phrasing from your email. Yeah, I just remember that phrasing, you know, that you had written, that you just said. It's good. We're not going to do every single aspect here, but so that's kind of where that person's coming from. And then we talk about the South Node ruler. So, Maria, can you give us an idea of just Scorpio in the fifth with the South Node ruler being in Scorpio in the fifth?
My creativity is deep and hidden.
Yeah, good. Exactly. So coming from Libra people, but I'm a Scorpio person, so there's that, you know, I'm a little deeper than all of you people who are just worried about what other people think and all that stuff. So then we get to this North Node, and we're just going to leave the aspects out with that for now. We get to this north node. And so in this chart, two out of the three things we've talked about are in the fifth house, the south node and the south node ruler. So this person has a very strong orientation towards the fifth house. Whether or not he is happy, he or she is happy about that, I think I have this as an imaginary woman, whether or not this imaginary woman is happy about it is secondary. but there's all this fifth house emphasis, and an emphasis on the other as well, and the responses of others. You know, the responses in Libra are, I'm listening to you, the responses in Scorpio are, how does this affect you, and don't you hate what I'm doing, kind of thing. So the north node in the 11th, this new ground, this new territory, you know, with all that emphasis on self and creativity and all that stuff, you know, somebody, you could just feel free to jump in. Give me an idea on the 11th house north node. In the other chart, we talked about the 11th house south node. So now we're going to paint the 11th house in a wonderful picture, you know, a wonderful way, because it's what the person needs to go and do. So just anybody can jump in and give me an idea on the 11th house north node. What's this blind spot?
Well, so I mean, looking at, well, this person with all the emphasis on the first house, like, you know, issues, and then fifth house, you know, both houses of basically, you know, self-expression, and then you go to this north node in Aries, which is also about, you know, to a certain degree, it's about the self, but it's in the house of community, 11th house. So I feel like, I just feel like the issue would be how to be a leader in community without being too self-absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like to,
yeah.
Like there would be some problems, especially with Uranus there conjunct the north node, like it would be some issues with standing out too much.
Right.
Not in that, I feel like it's not in that person's eyes, but I feel like the community, and tell me if I'm wrong, but like maybe it would be an issue, like it would be hard for the, like maybe the reflections from the community would be difficult for the person.
Right. Well, it could go both ways, but if it goes both ways, the person's energy field would be reflected by the group. The group is just like, you know, the group is, in this case, is imaginary. I mean, it's a bunch of people sitting there, but they're going to respond to the chart holder based on how she vibrates, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have all that emphasis on self. It's a good point with the first house stuff, the fifth house stuff, and then this group, a community idea and the reflection. Well, Uranus on the north node, you know, is going to indicate the person needs freedom within groups, needs to individuate within groups, but also needs to choose groups that really suit his or her goals.
Mm-hmm.
And when you live in the fifth house and the first house, it's all what's happening right now. So this goals thing is like, I don't even know what that would be about. But when you get in there, then you have the Uranus there. So people in this person's family might not know how to do Uranus, or they might have weird ideas about it. In this case, possibilities. I wouldn't want to be a part of a group because I'd just be a people get lost in crowds. People are just numbers whenever there are more than 5 or 6 of them or 20 of them. Like, that kind of prejudice about individuality and what's possible within a group. Now, you said the phrase becoming a leader within a group. So why did you say that?
Because of the Aries.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. So, so that's like one layer of it, and then this other layer being the Uranus there, difference, individuation,
right.
And because it's on the north node, the person will have probably some stupid prejudices, like that idea of being effaced in the crowd. Because somebody in the fifth house who's comfortable there, I mean, even if they're not happy, but might be familiar there, you know, doesn't want to have to surrender individuality. So Uranus on the 11th house north node, like the person's wrong if there are these beliefs. But the belief might be, I would be giving up too much if I were part of a group. And that would be a reflection of attitudes that have come down karmically or energetically from the family. You know, you could have a family with South and the Fifth. You could have a family full of people who are you know, they don't do anything with groups because they're obsessed with their opinion, or they're maybe not even as a negative, but just as a principle, my individuality is sacred. You know, my voice, my opinion, I can't get lost. So they're going to have prejudices about politics and clubs. And so you talk about, whoa.
Sorry.
Talk about, that's okay. North Node, is that are we ascending or is that the alien invasion? Which one is it? I think we're ascending. Somebody, one of you is ascending. I don't know. But at North Node the 11th, they need to learn to work with groups. But here you have this prejudice there. You have this idea of something that's messed up about it. And because Uranus is retrograde, they're doubly wrong about whatever that assumption is. You know, because they have to invent it. They have to give themselves, and this will be a positive way to approach it, give themselves permission to explore being a part of a group, but to honor the Uranus thing and the Aries thing, you know, don't get too committed. Explore, you know, instinctively check, which is an Aries word, instinctively explore. Like, go to some meeting where you think they're going to talk about something where you're into, and you get there and it's like this. Well, second on the agenda today. And you're like, forget it. You know, it's like it doesn't vibe with your Uranus. So if you're not happy with it, get out. You go to the next one and you think it's a pro-choice rally, and it's like some kind of philosophical discussion that's not really that. And you're like, oh, I was wrong about what this is. Out of here. You know, like, I don't like this. This is not what I'm here for. Or you go to any kind of cause. Right, or any. So anyway, so it's weird for that person to step into that, but once he or she gets there, especially with the Uranus on the North Node, they need to know, and she needs to learn that she can say no, and she can remove herself, and that's like activating that Uranus in the 11th. But, you know, at the same time, the Uranus is a real part of this person's psyche. So, but to unwind old prejudices or beliefs about it, what it would look like, is critical. Yeah.
Can I ask a question about the axis? With a family system, South Node being in the fifth house in Libra, which is, you know, so you have a South Node being in the fifth house, which is about the self. But, you know, self-expression.
Mm-hmm.
But then Libra being about the other, would it be safe to say that maybe the family system might be encouraging self-expression as long as it's kind of accepted by the other, you know, and then that's confounded by the Uranus conjunct North Node and Aries, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't stand out too much. Like, stand out
That's right.
Express yourself. Okay, don't stand out too much. Okay.
If we like it. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And then the person comes home with, like, you know, something not acceptable. Like, oh, the parents are like, oh, we love that you're taking art class as a sophomore in high school. You didn't have to. It's now an elective. You're doing it. We love that. And then the person comes home with, like, you know, something a little risque or something that might not even been acceptable to the teacher, but the family's like, wait a minute, this is not what we were talking about. We were talking about art.
Right.
But there may be somebody out there in an 11th house thing who would love, six people who are kind of Uranus-y and fringy, right, because they don't accept to fit in, who see the kid, the sophomore's thing, you know, hanging in the thing, and like, whoa, that's awesome, come be our friend. You know, it's like, because when you let yourself be in the 11th house, you can find people who are like you, but you have to be willing to say thanks for playing and no thanks to a bunch more people than you actually fit with. That's a secret to the 11th house. It's not that you should be a part of group. It's that you have to find the right group for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a separate point, that's kind of like, you know, all this stuff about that sometimes you hear me prattling on about coming out of the Piscean age into the Aquarian age. It's not just that you're supposed to belong. That's the Piscean age idea. Just stop, you know, standing out so much and just fit in. But the Aquarian thing is, well, it's not just enough to belong. You have to belong to the people who are right for you. So you have to find them. And in the 11th house, we're so accustomed to being part of a group in different ways that we don't know that we have the right to say, oh, yeah, no thanks. Thanks for playing. I'm going to go over and do this other thing. And sometimes it can be like a real challenge to, remove ourselves from certain, contexts where the group mind has some solidity or some power. So finding the right people, like a summary statement of this nodal thing would be finding the right people to be bold with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boldly create the future. Instinctively go for what you want, but find the right people to learn to work with. And because of some of those ideas or those prejudices or biases, right? I like saying prejudice, but it's kind of a loaded word. I mean, it's a lot to it. But these pre-existing ideas, you have to individuate, but don't do it too much, but maybe it's not necessary, and kind of all these ideas that can conflict about it because it's on the North Node, and you just have to, somebody comes up to you and says, I saw your drawing, and I know you're 16 years old, but I'd like to have 3 of your drawings in my gallery downtown. That's Uranus and Aries in the 11th walking up to you at like a school art show. You know what I'm saying? Like sudden, surprising, out of the blue, trust your gut, do it. You know, kind of letting yourself be drawn into the 11th house through a group and getting an audience. In some ways, a 5th house to 11th house transition can be taking your creative self and getting an audience instead of just being this person who's making noise or something or doing something. The person needs to learn to blend in to some degree. But with Uranus here, that might be, that's a challenge too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To be a part of a group, but it can be a Uranian group where everybody says, oh, you don't have to dress the same way. You don't have to do the same thing. It's all fine, but we're here together because we have something that connects us. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so other comments or thoughts, and you can even say, when you said this about that, I thought of these other keywords. That's absolutely welcome if you have something like that going on, because I want to explore different ways of looking at it.
I have a sense that this person would not do well in a sort of established group, like a conservative political party or, some... group that's more has been around for a long time and has sort of an orderly structure to it.
Yeah, I agree. But if you found this person in that kind of group, as this person's astrologer, you would tell her this stuff and say, you actually can, give yourself permission to do it differently. And because the North Node thing is a blind spot, with the planet there on the North, and we have these pre-existing ideas, there is a possibility that the person might be in a group that doesn't work for him or her. Like, I'm just kind of doing this because I think
this is what
you're supposed to do.
Huh?
Right.
Right.
But yeah, if it's boring,
exactly.
if it's
going on.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I
didn't hear the whole.
Especially with the Libra, the other thing going on in the South Node.
Yeah.
It could be in a group that just isn't for them.
Right.
The other thing I see, because it's funny that you randomly chose a chart from 1930 in which you have the Uranus-Pluto square, which is echoed now.
Oh, yeah.
And with the Pluto, so you have all this emphasis on the North Node and Uranus and the 11th house and groups, and then the first house with the Jupiter and Mars. It's like this person could be part of like the Occupy movement, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're in self expression, Mars action. Jupiter, kind of like bigness and that huge square with those three planets in the first house in Cancer, which is about kind of like homeland stuff, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So then the person could do it well or not do it well, but yeah, that would fit. I mean, that would be something to explore, like breaking free from the establishment, you know, as part of the, you know, part of the 11th house thing and the fight, you know? The Aries North Node is also about, you know, stop being so polite and just stand up for yourself already.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you have to stand, and when you have an Aries, this is an Aries deficit. I mean, Pluto's conjunct Mars in the first, so there's an Aries thing happening, you know? The archetype is present. But if it's at all stifled, there can be a sense of kind of an Aries vacuum or deficit. And, you know, should I be polite? Now, this is South Node rulers in Scorpio, so maybe I know something that's edgy. Maybe I tell you, maybe I don't. Maybe I really listen to what's appropriate. Maybe I'm afraid of being rejected about that. But that Aries North Node is like, just stand up and do what you need to do. Like, fight for what you need to fight for. And in the process, unlearn prejudices about fighting. This is another important point, because the Aries North Node says, I haven't really fought. I'm coming from people who are concerned with what's fair, and maybe they're trying to keep the peace, but I haven't really done that. I mean, maybe the person has, for individual concerns, with that Pluto Mars in the first. But there's something that's needed to learn, you know, needed to be learned about that Aries, and that can be standing up and fighting. And in the 11th, a cause in which I believe, fighting for a cause. So the Occupy thing would fit this, you know. Also, you got a fourth house sun, you know.
Mercury,
you got a fourth
yeah.
house sun. Uh-huh. Yeah, so there's like an emphasis on that, like, national thing with that Pluto and Cancer. And this is my home. You know, stop ruining it with your corporate whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you for that. I'd like to jam on this chart. I'd like to just talk about other things, too, and talk about this personality, too. You know, because there are things we haven't even spoken about. And so, you know, the class is about the karmic analysis, but I also am happy to add all this in so you can, you know, add other things in there, like that fourth house sun echoing the idea of Pluto and Cancer, the stellium in Cancer, actually. So if there's anything else, you know, because I want to tie it in with these karmic themes, because elements of personality can be tempered or can be modified or guided and shaped by the karmic issues. It's a very important thing.
Well, where Saturn is, this is Maria.
Yeah.
Where
yeah,
Saturn
yeah.
is in the chart, is that person going to have trouble with authority?
The person could, yeah. It definitely could. I mean, you have this square to Uranus, but also on the descendant in Capricorn. So other people might seem to get to be Saturn, right? Other people, because the seventh and descendant might be the house of the other. But also the quincunx to Mars. So in this person's heart, this person's emotional center is also having a problem with Saturn.
You mean
yeah,
the moon?
Definitely.
The Saturn quincunx to the moon.
Oh, what did I say?
He's in Mars.
Thank you. I'm
you
having issues it? With Mars, Mercury, and Moon. I want to mix them up. And it's a Mercury-Neptune thing I'm just trying to deal. But thank you. Yes, I mean
yeah.
the Moon and Leo second, yes. Quincunx, yeah. Yeah, and then Mercury. You know, by extension, Sun, because it's tied in with the Mercury, square the Saturn as well. So definitely could have problems with authority figures too, yeah. And so related to that, you know, Uranus would be the rebel, but on the North Node, the person might have some skewed ideas about what that means. Does that make sense? Like you
yeah.
see... Yeah, so one way to do this, Uranus, is to say, I affirm my goals, and I will work with the people. I am bravely going to explore the right directions for myself and what groups or associations might work for me best. But it's also the kind of punk aesthetic and attitude. That's very Uranus in Aries in the 11th kind of thing. It's like, I almost can't even hear what you're saying because I just fucking hate you because you're part of the establishment. And so that, you know, embracing, like as I say, the person could do the Occupy movement in a good way or a bad way. And the bad way would be full of rage and with this edge that's like, I will fight if I have to. That doesn't have to be that way. But an Aries North Node person might not get that calm self-assertion that's instinctive is a wonderful Aries expression.
Oh, can I say something about the Aries?
Yeah, sure. We'll jump around. Totally.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, because you know, sometimes in evolutionary astrology, we don't talk a lot about the North Node ruler, but being Mars.
Right.
And Mars is conjunct the ascendant in the first house,
mm-hmm.
so that's like that's a very strong Mars.
Yes, and Jupiter-Pluto. So it's big because of Jupiter, and it's intense because of the Pluto, so yes.
Yes, I mean, that's a real, it'd be a totally different chart that, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The person at least has ammunition, Marsward.
Yes, but it might be wrapped up in weird power struggle
emotion.
Stuff. So the person,
right.
Yeah, the person might be highly emotionally reactive, and that's where anger comes in. And the person
right.
might jump to conclusions. Jupiter is famous for not listening, right? Jump to conclusions. And the Pluto thing, the stakes can be very high because I feel it very deeply, and my sense of empowerment as a human is wrapped up in this Mars. And so this can be a person who walks into the room like giving off the attitude that, don't mess with me, I will mess you up. This person can present with this horrible Mars. You know, South Node Libra, yes, but this person can show up with a chip, a chip like the size of Rhode Island on his or her shoulder. Like, that's possible here with Pluto Mars together.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I'm just saying, so certain things might need to be unlearned. So, yes, there's ammunition, and some things might need to be unlearned.
Tom, this is
yes.
Starshine. I just have one question
yes.
that's confusing me just a little bit. I'm hearing you describe this person, and it all makes sense with the first house and the fifth house and the 11th house. But so if they have a sun in Virgo in the fourth,
mm-hmm.
that sounds very different to me than what you're describing. And then also the Saturn in Capricorn in the sixth, it
right.
seems like even though they would be squaring that and opposing that from certain
uh-huh.
angles, that's also a part of them. So I'm trying
totally.
To understand how
mm-hmm.
that would be, because like that, when I think of Capricorn, Saturn in the sixth, and
yes.
Virgo, Sun in the fourth, that sounds like a very humble, serving, kind of structured person. So I'm trying to get
yeah.
how that would fit in with this other part that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. It's a matter of layers.
Go ahead,
Julie.
Well, can you also add in the fact that Venus, which is beauty and grace, in the fifth, is trining all that stuff in the fourth, which way might temper all of that, you know what I'm saying? So
right.
that could
yes,
humble
yes, yes.
and soften everything.
Right, exactly.
The next amount
it's a matter
of
layers.
Throw everything.
No, it's good. This is what real chart analysis is like. You know, like, how do I characterize that Pluto? Well, that doesn't seem to fit with these other three things. It's perfect.
Right.
This is really what should be happening when we look at charts, like to weigh all these things. So what I've been giving you and what this class has been focusing on is the karmic story. So this is the thing mm-hmm. happening behind personality. This is the thing that is... So what you're talking about is absolutely valid and incredibly important.
Okay.
And yet it's a layer, it's personality tools, but this other stuff is the scaffolding on which everything else is built.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, the Venus, I want to talk about each of those things. Sun and Virgo in the fourth, so that means that the part of the self that's making decisions and organizing the rest of the personality is in the fourth house, right, house of home, nurturing, family, you know, inner world and inner foundation and psychic basement and who I really am. And that's in Virgo, so there's a sense of responsibility about self, perhaps to family, perhaps being of service in the community. There's like that, and that can be very humble. It can be very, very humble. And then you have this Saturn on the descendant. And if other people get to be Saturn in Capricorn, you know, because the seventh house, sometimes we aren't sure how to own that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we might let other people do that for us. Then, yeah, we might not be hard-edged, authoritarian, a little running around little fascists or whatever. Like, we might not be like that, Saturn, kind of bad Saturn energy. So we might have a sense of responsibility because our sun's in Virgo, and we might have, you know, a sense of deferring to others in a respectful way, which would be a positive Saturn in the sixth, you know, in Capricorn thing. So that those things are true, but if I have unresolved emotional issues I cannot contain because I have Pluto, Jupiter, Mars in the first house in Cancer, it's gonna affect it. And the thing that wins is the emotional imprint. Sun here in this chart is not involved in the karmic story except as a sextile to Pluto. So Sun here, you have the dominant part of the personality trying to manage all these things. Now, I'm not saying this person's out of control or would naturally be, but there's a possibility that if the Pluto thing's unresolved, you know, if the South Node thing is unresolved, if I'm still trying not to fight with my mother, but I just want to tell her the truth, right? Things that are unresolved from the past or whatever, you know. So, you know, I feel isolated, fifth house. I don't know who to turn to, 11th house, you know, whatever. But, like, all those things that might be unresolved, those actually trump certain personality things. What I want you to do this week is to look at charts you know well. I mean, yourself, you'll have some blind spots, you know, because you're in touch with, you know, lots, if not all parts of you. But look at charts of people you know well and look for this. Look for somebody who has sun and moon not involved in the karmic story, right? Like in this case. Sun and moon are not involved. And so, you know, look for people you know really, really well and say, yeah, this person's Libra sun, do I always see that? Or am I looking at Pluto and Virgo? Do I deal with that person's, you know, issues about service? You know, how does this person, what drives this person more? And it's like the sun and Libra would be a tool, but the Pluto and Virgo is an issue.
So then what you're saying is, if the karmic issues are not resolved, the sun may never get expression.
It would get expression, but it might not be really in charge like the sun should be.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd still see the Virgo thing, but the person making all the decisions might feel weak, the sun part, you know, inner manager or CEO or whatever, might have some problems really managing things, because this is, we're talking about the sun, inner decision maker, trying to manage a bunch of deep emotional imprints that might be pained or traumatic or difficult or angry.
Okay.
You know, I'll use myself as an example. My Scorpio sun has matured over the years, and now I feel like a Scorpio, you know, to a lot of degree. But for most of my life, it's been Cancer South Node, and all my Libra stuff square the nodes, and the Chiron and Aries square the nodes. So I've been like, you know, my 12th and 1st house Libra stuff in the ascendant, and my Chiron in Aries. That's been really dominant in my life because there are unresolved issues. So my Scorpio and the sun in the 2nd house is trying to just get all my ducks lined up in a row, tell the truth about myself, and get to the essentials about what I need to survive and how can I manage all that. But my Pluto in Libra is crying because everyone in the 12th is crying because everyone's dead. So my second house sun has a problem, like, making lists of things to do, because my Pluto in the 12th, I'm still having loss. I'm having the emotional imprint that takes over.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And as I manage that, all that Libra stuff and the Pluto healing and all that stuff, then I'm more able to have that sun be strong. I'm not saying that nobody's sun really matters at all. I'm not saying that at all, but it really... if there's stuff unresolved, like the Pluto thing's under the surface, the South Node stuff looks like the world is like this. Everywhere I turn, there's this thing happening, stuff happening. Mm-hmm. And South Node ruler, this is who I'm supposed to be. But the sun, then, is this tool for managing this. And so, I mean, it's, you know, to really get into this, like, I have a client who's been working with me. In July, it'll be 2 years, almost weekly. And she's getting it. she's getting it, a half an hour a week, you know, and she's getting it, but it takes that much time sometimes to really look at all these different angles to really know, well, what is my son supposed to be doing here? And I mean, I'll tell you this. I've worked so much on her Pluto stellium in the 12th and her south node in the 2nd and the south node ruler in the 7th opposing Neptune in the 1st, like all these different, you know, layers of things that I would say when I talk about her son, I'm telling her, this is your tool. This is your tool to organize things. But it's like, you know, the bulk of the work is in teaching her to deal with her emotions, which is energy. Because the imprint trumps everything, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. It's great, great questions. Really important questions. Good questions. Yeah. So anything else before we...
I just want to say...
I hear somebody. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Also, we have two questions. Okay, go ahead. Julie, go ahead, and then and we'll cut the other person too.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
This chart that you chose, it's very interesting for the timing because of Uranus Pluto square echoing what's happening now. But
yeah.
Of course, Uranus is now in Aries with Pluto on the opposite side in Capricorn.
Yeah.
That the other echo is Saturn trine Neptune, which in this chart are in earth signs, and right now they are in water signs. And I just find that really interesting. I randomly chose this. So.
Yeah, I did. It was completely, it was guided. I just basically had the intention of a variety of things, and this is what happened. But yeah.
Okay,
and
that's
then
all. It was a comment.
A question? Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There was another question?
Yes, this is Maria.
Yes.
I have a sense, and I don't know if it's, you know, valid or not. It sort of changed for me, like thinking of this chart as a male, it was like, this is really trouble. You know, this guy is going to have a lot of trouble, and he's going to irritate a lot of people. But if this person is a female, as in your example, to me that changes things. Because of the, you know, what's going on in Virgo there.
Yeah.
Whereas a male who is a Virgo sun and all, it's not going to, I don't think it's going to take, it's not really going to help him much with all these other strong aspects.
Oh. Well, it might not, because basically if you don't do your sun, you will not feel sane. So even a man... Yeah, I mean, but this person might, you know, if there's anything wrong with Pluto, Mars in the first, person could get into some fights and power struggles and be really distracted by stuff like that, and then that fourth house sun might not have a lot of time, but I think that you know, men with fourth house suns can still be very homey and nesting, but yeah, to clear the imprints, culturally speaking, men are supposed to be Mars Pluto. You know, so that might lead to being distractible by those cultural things, the context.
Yes, I have a feeling that he would have a lot more trouble, a male would have a lot more trouble than a female at clearing some of those hard aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of the cultural teaching about anger and sex and all those things and the gender differences. Yeah, definitely. And so it does matter. All that stuff does matter, too. Yeah. So good. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Good comments, good questions. And
thank you, Tom.
Yeah,
thank
good.
You, Tom.
Thank you. And so I want you, part of your homework this week is to look at charts of people you know well, like I mentioned. And look at where the sun and or moon and or rising is not involved in the karmic story. You know, is not touching or whatever in these fourth harmonic aspects, the conjunction, square opposition, and then adding in the quincunx, where it's not involved, where sun is not involved. And just, I mean, you might have to, I don't know, I think, I don't know, 1 in 10 or something, I don't know, whatever. There's like a small percentage of people that will be involved, like south node in Leo, automatically that's, you know, whatever, south node conjunct sun or square sun, that's not what we want. But where it's not even involved, and just look at that and say, how did this person do that sun? And look at that personality level after you look at the karmic story, too. So that's the first part. The second part is I will send charts tomorrow, and I'll just ask you to kind of glance over them. You don't have to study them, but you can if you have time and you want to. But we're going to talk about them next week. We're going to jump around to different things. I may send you like 6 or 7 charts, so don't feel burdened that you have to do this exhaustive analysis on all of them. But you might want to do a single keyword thing on each one. Oh, this one, South Node, 10th house. Reputation's important. You know, South Node ruler in the 4th. Home is important to the personal life. You might find that useful, but we're going to jam on it in class and do a little improv, and I'll do more modeling for you of how my thought process works, and then we'll kind of play with it too. And so that's what the next 3 weeks are about, to give you multiple examples to play with now and over the future too, and so you can get more practice. So thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. Have a great week.
Thanks. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.